something brand new, we would love to hear from you. Now, I'm joined in the studio by John Mallon, who is a spokesperson with Forest Éireann. And just to explain to people out there, Forest Éireann is what exactly, John?
It's a smokers' rights group, if you like. The F in Forest stands for freedom, and it's the freedom to enjoy a smoke if you're that way inclined. Freedom not to, if you're that way inclined as well. But it's a freedom organisation, mainly, in a democracy. And that's what we attempt to support the smoker. We listen to their grievances, we listen to their problems, and we try to air them.
Now, you say that smokers are in danger of becoming second-class citizens. I would say they probably are seen as being second-class citizens right now.
And that, in fact, Fran, is what the tour is all about. We have things like denormalisation, a campaign. And denormalisation is a very, very nasty thing to do to one section of the community. There's about a million, maybe a little more, smokers in the country. They're ordinary, decent people. They're taxpayers. There's several of the myths, for example, around smoking that we cost society. The HSE, 2 years ago, at the Joint Committee on Public Health, were asked directly the question, how much does it cost to treat smokers every year? And they came up with a figure for smoke-related illness of 550 million. Now, there is no illness unique to smokers. Anything smokers get, non-smokers get as well. There isn't a unique smoking disease.
But something like lung cancer is largely smokers, isn't it?
Can be, but that's about the only one you can say with any kind of certainty. But even at that, 550 million, they said, was the total cost of the HSE, and I'm sure they lumped everything they could think of in there in that figure. But the revenue commissioners that were then asked, what was the contribution in excise and VAT every year? And it's 1,200 million. So smokers actually are the only section of society who not only pay all their medical bills up front, but pay the same again for everybody else. And there is, the government has earmarked sections of the revenue, the smoking revenue, for other areas of health and for education. There is actually a breakout of those figures online. So smokers are a huge contributor to society.
In the budget, of course, cigarettes went up again and largely got a big round of applause.
Yeah, and you see, this is actually the problem. We're working towards an inclusive society. We had a vote on gay marriage recently. The travellers' rights are being discussed currently. We note with interest that the possession of cocaine and heroin is going to be decriminalised. Marijuana will be legalised. One of the ministers is talking about injection rooms for heroin addicts in Dublin, where they can go in free of charge and get methadone injections. And yet, the poor, humble smoker has to be thrown out in the street, priced out of the market, and denormalised. That seems very, very strange
to me.
Well, John,
you are killing yourself smoking.
But whose business is that? And genuinely, your health is a matter for yourself and your GP. We're told everything that we do these days are risks. For example, they say that the danger with smoking is that it's carcinogenic, cancer-causing. They also have designated diesel fumes as cancer-causing. If you think of what spits out of trucks and buses, they attempted a couple of weeks ago to designate meat as cancer-causing. And ultimately, everything becomes cancer-causing if you think about it. Life is a lottery. There are people who smoke all their lives who have no ill effects from it at all. I've been smoking 43 years, and the only medical problems I've had have had to do with a fall, a back problem. Mm. Some people are lucky, some people are not.
But I can hear even the way you speak, I would know
sure.
You're a smoker.
Absolutely.
So it has affected you in some way.
Well, there's those that would say a gravelly voice is quite attractive. But yes, perhaps, but after 43 years, maybe no surprise. And after 43 years, I've enjoyed my innings and I'm working now on an e-cigarette as a wonderful way to quit. But I'm also being
But you're told, trying to quit, are you?
No. I'm trying to cut way down. I've had two doctors in my life tell me that if you keep your smoking under 10 a day, your body will repair any damage done overnight. But when you go over that, it's a progressive thing. Mm. The e-cigarettes then are brought out as a wonderful, but because they're not pharmaceutical products, they're condemned. There's dark rumours that there must be. We haven't discovered what's wrong with them, but there must be something wrong with them. But the thing that's wrong with them is they look like you're smoking. I mean, how sick is that? And in a rush to be the first guys on the block, Irish Rail banned e-cigarettes on the trains. And
well, that's because people aren't sure about the long-term effects of the vapour. I mean, you know, that's fair enough, isn't it?
The vapour is just that. It's water vapour. With a slight, I mean, there is no miracle to these e-cigarettes. They have a liquid nicotine in a capsule, a tiny bit in. It's mainly water. And there's a flavouring. I don't know if you know, but when you go to buy an e-cigarette, if you want it to taste like a real cigarette, you have to specify tobacco flavour. Otherwise, there'd be no taste at all from it. And there's a battery with a coil. And when you inhale, the coil lights up, takes a charge from the battery, heats the liquid, and you get water vapour in your mouth. And you may as well be frightened of the vapour from a boiling kettle.
To get back to the cigarettes, like Forest, particularly Forest UK, is funded by cigarette companies, isn't it?
It's co-funded by cigarette companies. We are their customers. They're helping the ordinary smoker to have a voice. That's our job. In terms of the tobacco companies and their difficulties with government or their difficulties with their products, that's their job. Nothing to do with us. They have their own professional PR people. We're an amateur organisation. But we try to get across the message from the smoker because, interestingly, Fran, the smoker is not talked to and hasn't been right from the beginning of this thing. He's talked at... smokers are told what they believe. They're told what they think. They're told they want to quit.
Well, you see, some of the reason for that may be the fact that you're addicted. So you're not really in a position to make a...
rational choice?
A rational choice, yeah.
Well, you see, addiction is a difficult problem as well. In fact, addiction is just a word. Addiction means something that you do habitually. Now, true addiction, for example, to something as powerful as heroin, is a craving in the body, an unreasonable craving in the body. But in the laws of addiction, there are seven laws of addiction. Two of them, cigarette smoking doesn't apply to. One is that your body builds a resistance to the substance you're addicted to. That would mean that you would need bigger and bigger quantities each time, for example, with heroin. But there are people I know that have smoked one cigarette a day all their lives. There's other people that never go above 20. So it doesn't work like that. And the other one is, of course, that there are more ex-smokers around today than there are smokers.
Even though we keep hearing bandied around that to get off the addiction of nicotine is more difficult than heroin.
Some people will tell you it's easier. And if it were indeed... you know, if that were the case, and I've heard that bandied around, I don't believe it, a word of it. But if it were, why aren't there nicotine rooms for smokers, you know, as there are for methadone rooms and injections and all the rest of it? Where, in actual
fact, of course, the reason for that is that if you're smoking and I'm not, I'm going to be affected passively by your smoking.
But you see, they've segregated us already. You're not going to be. They're trying to ban smoking outdoors now. Now, the indoor smoking ban... the evidence for that was fairly, the scientific evidence for introducing it was very shaky grounds. The largest study of its kind was done by two professors in California, Professors Cabot and Edstrom. They studied 117,000 Americans over a 40-year period and concluded at the end of that, these were spousal situations. One spouse smoked, the other didn't. Their conclusion at the end was that cigarette smoking in the home was of little or no concern to anybody and shouldn't be. That it wasn't. However, having said that, the thing was brought in. Now they're trying to ban smoking outdoors. No study can be done on smoking outdoors because it blows away and dissipates. There is no measurement at all that you can take in an outdoor setting.
But I know when I find this all the time. If I'm in a public house and I'm walking out the front door and there's a group of smokers gathered there, which happens in some of the smaller pubs. Sure. I mean, I am inhaling the smoke as I go out. And I object to that.
I assure you, Fran, it won't do you any harm at all. But if you
are... it's unpleasant.
Fine, but if you are, those smokers are not there of choice. They're forced out there. I did a tour 2 years ago now asking the question, why couldn't there be comfortable smoking rooms in the pub? The smokers could go in, they could get their coffee or their beer, and they could go out to a separate room away from everybody else, quite happily. But no, when the ban was brought in, the Gardaí said they would not police the smoking ban. They were not going into the pubs on a Saturday night finding out who was smoking. So the HSE panicked and had to take over, and they seconded a few people from their ranks to become the smoking police, the famous smoking police that we hear about. Now, they took a very vindictive and petty line with the idea of the smoking room. There were several pubs around the country had wonderful separate rooms, double door scenarios, across the yard to outhouses, whatever. And the smoking police came in and they drew up new guidelines. They're not law now, they're just an arbitrary thing, whereby by definition a smoking room must either have no roof on it or two walls missing. Now, that smoker's out there on their own. They wanted the rain and the wind. They wanted to make smokers uncomfortable. And funnily enough, prior to this tour, just before I started off, and it was coincidental with the tour, there was a paper published in the Journal of Social Science and Medicine in the USA. This was a fairly comprehensive research project that looked into the effects of the various anti-smoking measures taken against smokers over the years across the globe. And their view, they came up with several interesting findings. They said that the imposed stigma surrounding smokers leads to a number of different outcomes, including relapses, increased resistance to quitting, self-induced social isolation, and higher stress levels. And they said that, in fact, a lot of the smoking measures that have been taken could be counterproductive.
Of course, I mean, I'm just thinking from the HSE's point of view, if you have a designated smoking room, that's fine for smokers. But I mean, if the barman or the waitress has to go in there to either clean it or to do whatever it is that they'll be doing in there, they're exposed to passively again to smoke.
Well, the rule, for example, in France, and this was drawn up by a medical board in France, is that a hotel smoking room can be cleaned out 1 hour after it's been vacated by a smoker completely safely. That's the rule in France. We're very, very extreme in our views over here.
What about young people smoking? Do you advocate it?
Oh, good Lord, no.
No,
no, not at all.
This is where people might see the hypocrisy of what you're saying. If you don't advocate it, it must mean that you're finding something wrong with it.
No, Fran. Understand it this way. As a parent, for example, you're probably a parent yourself. You would warn your children, as I did myself, of the dangers of smoking, of the dangers of drinking. Obviously, again, maybe I'm of a generation where I never was confronted with drugs, but that is a very real problem with kids today. So as the children were growing up, I was warning them of all sorts of stuff. Their mother was carefully watching what they ate and what their diet was like, and we both were looking to their exercise and so on. Now, that's just normal parenting as far as I'm concerned. But what do you do then if a son or a daughter does come home and they are already smoking and they're of an age where they can make a choice, 18, 19, 20? You're confronted with a different scenario then, so there's no hypocrisy in it. You can advise against it. You can advise, for example, in alcohol moderation. You can do a whole variety of things, but you can't live their lives for them.
If you were doing it all over again, would you smoke?
Well, I'm not doing it all over again, so that's an impossible question to answer.
But I mean,
I don't know. But I'll tell you this much. I actually enjoy a cigarette, and I'm not afraid to say so. If you don't smoke yourself, you probably don't understand. But I enjoy a cigarette. I had, believe it or not, I had a lovely meal in Mulcahy's last night. I must compliment Mulcahy's bar in here in Clonmel. The food was gorgeous. And I had a cigar after it, and it was absolute nectar. It was beautiful. And I enjoy that. Now, I'm quite happy with that. After my breakfast in the morning, I love a cigarette. And at times of great stress, and I've had them. For example, a friend of mine in the last 2 years had a very serious operation in the big hospital in Cork, the University Hospital. I went to see him, and it was very distressing to see the man, a huge man, so brought down. And I got up halfway through, and I went outside the front door for a smoke. And my hands were shaking, they really were, from the depression, really, of seeing him like that. It was stressful. The cigarette actually helped me a great deal. Now, while I was standing out there was a loudspeaker telling me that my smoke was going up the side of the building in the window, and all the windows, of course, were closed, which is what they do in the modern hospital. But again, this was petty. It was an outdoor smoking ban. And, you know, because the smoking ban itself wasn't policed by the Gardaí, we had 98% compliance to it. That was good, decent, ordinary smokers, in deference to the people around them, getting up voluntarily and going outdoors. But when they start to ban it outdoors, smokers won't comply.
It's interesting that you told me, though, that the head of Forest UK doesn't smoke.
And again, I see nothing wrong with that because Forest is primarily a freedom organisation. I took up the cudgel on this thing way back in 2005. I felt there was something wrong-headed about it. I felt like everything else in society that we do, there are compromises, there are tolerances. Society is self-evolving. And this looked to me like social engineering. I felt bad about it and I started on it. I've seen many, many things since then I could get equally aggravated about. I assure you, like water and the banks and all the rest of it. But I just took a stand on this one and I said to myself, right, go with it.
All right, John, thanks for making time for us today.
Thank you for the invite, Frank.
John Mallon there of Forest Éireann, spokesperson for Forest Éireann. Let's take a break. We're back with more in just a few moments. It's 10:22.
Tip today.